Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Clever Girls Know podcast. This is Bola Shokumbi. I'm the founder and CEO of Clever Girl Finance. The Clever Girls Know podcast is a podcast for women, offering a space for conversations around personal finance, business, life, and living. I'd love for you to subscribe to this podcast, and you can do that everywhere you listen to your podcast episodes. And if you love what you listen to, head on over to iTunes and leave a review so that other amazing women just like you can find this podcast as well. I'd also love for you to stop by clevergirlfinance.com. We have new content on the blog multiple times a week. We have over 30 plus free courses. Plus, when you sign up for a course, you can talk to a Clever Girl Finance mentor for free to get encouragement, motivation, or if you just want to have an open, no shame, no judgment girl talk. Finally, check out our YouTube channel. Just search Clever Girl Finance on YouTube. And if you don't already follow us on Instagram, you can find us at Clever Girl Finance. Okay, so let's get into today's episode. Hey.
Hello.
Welcome to the Clever Girls Know podcast.
Thank you for having me, Bola. I've been waiting for this. Looking forward to talking to you.
Listen, I am so excited to speak to you because you are focused on something I love so much, which is food.
Yes, yes.
And you're also an incredible person. I met you in person several weeks back in New York City, and it was just such a pleasure. And I was like, I have to have you as a guest of the podcast. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So please tell everyone who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So I'm a vegan chef, a blogger, cookbook author. Sometimes I like to call myself a vegan extraordinaire because I kind of do all these different things around creating delicious, flavorful, healthy vegan recipes. But yeah, and my blog and all these things, it's all called Sweet Potato Soul. And I started way back in 2010, a year before I was even vegan myself, but you know, I was already on the path to becoming vegan and really just going down this direction, really.
That's so amazing. I love the name of your business. And for those of you listening, Janae is going to be talking to us about how she has grown a massive YouTube channel on her Southern inspired vegan recipes. And they are really good, y'all. You have to check out her channel on YouTube, Sweet Potato Soul. So let's dive into these questions. You have a massive YouTube channel. You have 700,000 subscribers, 700,000 plus based on these Southern inspired vegan recipes. And you also have an awesome cookbook called Sweet Potato Soul. Tell me more about the story behind how you started your business and why did you focus on vegan recipes? Mm-hmm.
Well, it was kind of by accident, all of it. So how it started was I started becoming interested in cooking. Well, my first interest started when I was a little kid. My mom didn't like to cook. And when I was 8 years old, we went to Barnes & Noble. And I don't know if you remember the discount section of Barnes & Noble. And she bought me a cookbook because I don't know why. I guess it was a nudge so that I would cook for her. But she bought me a Chinese cookbook and it was like a Chinese Bible. It was so thick. Chinese cookbook Bible. I think that's what it was called, something like that. And so I flipped through it and I found a recipe I wanted to make, and it was for a Szechuan chicken. And that is the only recipe I remember making from that cookbook, but I made it every week for like years. And that was my first like real foray into cooking for myself and for my mom. I was 8 years old at the time.
Wow.
Yeah. But my grandmother was a huge cook and she still is. So is my father. So I didn't live with them. I lived with my grandmother for a little while until I was seven. My mom and I lived with her, but I never lived with my dad. And so a lot of my cooking was like when I was at my dad's house, I would watch him. Or when I was with my grandmother, I would watch her and she would, you know, have me chop little things and mix, you know, flour and the wet and dry ingredients for like the pancakes or the cake. But I really became interested again in cooking for myself when I went to college, because even though I liked, you know, I love Chinese food, I love all ethnic food, I ate my grandmother's food. Despite eating those foods, I was pretty picky. I didn't like a lot of vegetables. I didn't like a lot of fruit. But when I went to college, I went to Boston University. I was studying acting And it just so happened to have a fabulous kitchen. I was renting a room in this house with all guys. And one of the guys owned the house, and he must have had a lot of money because his kitchen was really nice and he had all like perfectly well stocked. He had like everything you could want in a kitchen, and he did not use it. The other roommates didn't use it. It was all mine. So yeah. I started cooking again, and that was in 2007. Going to the farmers markets, and that was really the first time I like really started exploring new ingredients and vegetables and fruits for myself. Because especially I was shopping at the farmers market. Like I had never gone to a farmers market before I went to college. I never really even heard of it. So that was really the second like impetus to start cooking and to, you know, to begin this passion. And fast forward, I really became passionate about food right after that. And I moved to New York City to become an actress. I studied acting in college.
Wow.
Yes. That's what I was studying at BU. I went to the conservatory there. Wow. And it was crazy though, because when I got to New York, I'd wanted to be an actress since I was in middle school. But when I got to New York, I realized I wasn't passionate about it anymore. Within like 2 years, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to figure out something else. I felt like it wasn't the same as doing acting in college and high school, where it's really not that serious. I'm not trying to make money from it. It's just for fun. I didn't want to do it as a career. So I was a little lost for like a year trying to figure out, what will I do? I have a BFA in acting. Like, that's not going to apply to many other career paths. Am I going to have to go back to college? I didn't want to do that. I already spent all this money. So I was trying to figure it out. I was still cooking in the background. I actually had started my blog, Sweet Potato Soul, in the midst of this like confusion period of trying to figure out what was next. I started the blog as a hobby. It was at the time when there were lots of people blogging, and it wasn't about making money. It was just a way to like, it would showcase your recipes. It was like an online recipe book, right? No intention of ever pursuing this as a career at all. So I was, you know, posting on my blog in the background. I was also getting closer and closer to becoming fully plant-based. I was like, little by little, it took me like 4 years to finally become vegan from the time I started like eating healthier. So I was on my journey. And I got a job at a vegan restaurant in New York, Upper West Side, called Peace Food Cafe. And it was the first time I really was immersed in veganism. Like, all my coworkers were vegan. The owner of the restaurant is vegan. And they were talking to me about like all the benefits of becoming vegan, animal agriculture, how terrible it is for animals. And I would like walk away with my fingers in my ears, like, please don't tell me about like animal cruelty. No. I'm leaving. And I didn't want to hear it. But after a year of working there, I finally started like feeling guilty every time I ate animal products. And by that point, it was rare. I would have like one yogurt a week and maybe one slice of pizza a week. But even those little tiny, you know, meals or snacks would make me feel so guilty. And that was the beginning of 2011. So I decided to do my research and figure out, what are these people actually talking about? Why am I feeling guilty? Did my research, read some books, watched some movies, became vegan. When I became vegan, that was in March 2011. When I became vegan, my whole life changed because I had an epiphany. I was confused. I didn't know which direction to turn. I didn't want to go back to college. I didn't want to work in this restaurant making $9 an hour for the rest of my life. So I had this epiphany that, oh my goodness, I love this. Like, going vegan was amazing. I feel awesome. I feel like I'm living in alignment with my values in a way I've never had before. Oh my goodness, I am supposed to help other people also go vegan or eat healthy, eat plant-based, even if they're not 100. I'm supposed to be guiding people along this path that I've been on for the last 4 years. And that was my epiphany. And that's what made it all clear to me. I realized that my first step was not to make the blog a full-time job, because again, this is 2011. Mm-hmm. There's like only 2 or 3 people in the world who are doing that. So definitely wasn't considering that. But I did start a private chef company. That was the first step. And then I decided to start doing online programs And I enrolled all these people who ate at the restaurant where I worked.
So are you teaching them basically how to transition to become a vegan?
Exactly. Because these are people who are like eating at the restaurant and wanting to eat more vegan food, but they didn't have the money to hire me as a private chef. So I just like put together a program. I charged them $250 my first round, and I got like 8 people, and I felt like a millionaire. I was so proud. And then I was, you know, getting these private chefing clients. I started with one private chef client. I was cooking for her and her family every week in the home. And then I started cooking for her friends. And then I started getting more clients because Google, I just ended up like on the first result of Google in 2012 or 2013, maybe it was.
Oh, that's so awesome.
For New York City personal and private chef. Like literally I was number one. It was totally organic. So I just built this business around cooking. It was called The Nourishing Vegan. And in the background, I still did Sweet Potato Soul. I still had my blog. I had started a YouTube channel by this point, and I still was doing it. And it was all a hobby. And my main goal was to grow my private chef company and get to the point where I had other chefs working underneath me. And I was sent, you know, I was like making, you know, a percentage of what they would make. And it just really, that was how I wanted to scale The Nourishing Vegan, the private chef company. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to continue doing like these online programs. But what happened was in 2016, the very beginning of the year in January, I got a sponsorship deal with the North Carolina Sweet Potato Commission. That was my first ever sponsorship on my blog. I'm like, oh my goodness, somebody's going to pay me to be a blogger. I didn't even have ads on my blog at this point. Mm-hmm. And of course, social media had started, so I was posting there. So I got paid by them. It was so exciting. And then later that year, in the summer of that year, I got a cookbook deal from the blog, not from like private chefing.
Because of the, I guess, the popularity of Super Potato Soul, the blog, right?
Yeah. And also the YouTube had been growing. I don't know how many followers I had at that point, but I was like really not paying attention. So I don't know, but I was growing and I was consistent because I've always enjoyed doing these things. So I didn't have a plan, but I certainly was consistent regardless. So
yeah,
because of the popularity, I got these opportunities that were paying me, especially the cookbook deal, with paying me so much money. And it was especially like compared to the amount of work I had to do as a private chef. Also, by this point, 2016, I was really getting physically burnt out from private chefing because I was doing in-home cooking, meal delivery, cooking classes, and I even had a supper club in my apartment in Harlem. I called it the Little Harlem Kitchen, and I was just on a full blast. I had no children at the time, so I had a ton of energy. I guess I had that vegan energy because I was getting burnt out. It was like, this is too much. I don't have a car. This is New York City. And so it was really amazing timing that, you know, God gave me these new opportunities to start transitioning away from the physical labor that I was doing and really reach even more people by putting that same energy into Sweet Potato Soul. So it was,
yeah. This is so like, I'm just thinking through it, you know, like this is really like you pursuing your passion and turning it into an income source, a business for yourself. And it has scaled so amazingly. And just listening to you talk about how, you know, it started with curiosity with your grandma and your mom and your dad watching them cook and you starting to cook at 8 years old. And I've always wondered, when is the right age to let a child start cooking? My daughter is 10 and I'm like, oh, be careful. No,
she can do it. She can do it.
I'm not going to trust her.
You should trust her.
You fired me. But I just love how you thought you were going to do one thing. You were in school for that one thing. Yeah. You spent money on that one thing, which was acting. That was the right thing to do. But you had this passion in you. And I love that you took that leap of faith to pursue your passion. Like, even though it may have seemed crazy that you got a job at a restaurant working $9 an hour, you were figuring stuff out. And I love how you made these different pivots and transitions to find yourself
in the space that you wanted to be. So you started out with private chefing and then teaching classes and then your supper club. And then, you know, you're still blogging on the side and cooking and sharing your recipes, which is tied to your passion. But then realizing that, wait a minute, I can get brand partnerships this way. I can reach more people at scale with my videos. I don't have to burn myself out cooking for several families, doing deliveries, doing the classes, et cetera. So I love how you made that transition and you didn't like, you know, sometimes when you have a passion and it's not going the way you think it should go, when you're doing it one way, you can give up. I love how you allowed yourself to transition into a different mode and still pursue your passion.
Yeah.
This is, it's so great to hear. So I had a question for you. And for those of you listening, listen, the recipes on Janae's YouTube channel are not just for vegans.
No, they're not just for vegans. And
listen, they're so good.
Thank you.
That leads into my next question, because you focus on Southern cuisine, right?
Yes.
And this type of food is often meat heavy, right? A lot of meat heavy dishes. What inspired you to veganize a lot of these classic Southern recipes? And how have your viewers responded to you about this?
So it came because when I first became vegan, I didn't consider like, oh, what am I going to eat at Christmas and Thanksgiving? But that year when I went home, because I became vegan in the beginning of 2011. And so when I went home for Christmas, oh my goodness. I was like, I can't eat any of this. I didn't think this through, because at the point I was already not eating meat before I went vegan, but I was still eating, you know, eggs and dairy Thanksgiving and Christmas. Like I was like, eat my grandmother's sweet potato pie and biscuits and rolls and all this stuff. Right. So that was what inspired me to, well, it wasn't really to do Southern or soul food at first. It was just like, I need to veganize these recipes because I can't live without these recipes. Like I am extremely like attached to tradition, especially culinary tradition. So I just knew like, this is not going to work if I can't, like, I just cannot, I'm not willing to give up these foods, period. So then that set me on that journey of veganizing my grandmother's recipes that I selfishly wanted to eat. And for myself, it is for me. Yes. I'm like, they could eat whatever. They could eat what she makes, but I need it to taste the same. I need to trick my brain into thinking that Nana made this, you know? So that it took a while. Like some recipes were not difficult. Like, for example, my collard greens. I met a chef. It was a chef friend of mine when I lived in New York. She catered some party. Like we were both catering. It was me, her, and I feel like there's one more person. It was like a showcase of private chefs in New York. And for her, one of her dishes, it was some kale. It was like this delicious kale. And I was like, girl, this has meat in it. This is like in 2013. Girl, this has meat in it. You told me it was vegan. I was upset. She's like, no, it isn't. It isn't. It's just the spices. And she told me that she used smoked paprika and soy sauce. And look, I was like blown away. And I took that and ran with it. So for like my collard greens, I realized that's how you can get the collard greens also to taste like they've got, you know, ham hock or smoked turkey neck in it.
Yeah.
So like that was an easy one. But on the other hand, for example, my Nana's sweet potato pie, which was my favorite food in life, like literally favorite in food in life. That
especially
thing took,
if you're used to a specific taste from your grandmother, for anybody to beat that, right?
Exactly. Like I would never, but as a kid, I wouldn't eat anybody else's sweet potato pie. I wouldn't eat pumpkin pie. I wouldn't like, no, it has to be my grandmother's. And it took me probably 3 to 4 years to get that one down, that recipe, because I was so not willing to compromise on texture, taste. It had to be perfect. So it, and you know how I got I was inspired and I finally nailed the recipe. I was eating at, I went to True Food Kitchen way back when True Food Kitchen was like new and I was in Colorado. So this is like 2014 and they had a butternut squash pie. Now butternut squash pie doesn't taste like sweet potato pie. However, I loved the firmness because it was vegan. I asked them, what is in here to make it so firm? They're like, oh, sorry, we can't tell you. We don't know, you know, ask the chef. Oh, can't tell you. Right. But then I went home and I realized, because I used to eat a lot of butternut squash as well. I love that. I realized, wait a second, butternut squash is like when you put it in the refrigerator, it firms up. So I think I don't think they were using anything. I think it just firms up. So that was, then I said, well, wait, what if I put this in my sweet potato pie? Because I can cover the flavor of the butternut squash with the sweet potato. And now I don't have to use like tofu or like, I was just having a hard time getting the texture down. That's how I nailed it. And now, like I said, it took me like three or four years to get that recipe down. So it has been a journey for sure.
I love that, you know, and it's so interesting because I've wondered when I've watched some of your videos, like how does she, like the way you describe the, cause I haven't tried, I've tried your lentil soup.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. I tried it because a friend of mine wanted a lentil soup recipe and she was like, what she found was not any good. And she's like, you should try it. But I'm just so curious as to how like your process of designing each of the recipes so that you get it to taste in your Southern way. And I can tell that you're very picky because you've set yourself a high standard, even just for that, that sweet potato pie from your grandma.
Yeah. So now I kind of, it's intuitive to me. So I don't think I don't really think too much.
Because you know it now, right?
Yeah. It's been so long.
Yeah. You know, all the ingredients,
Exactly. And I know, I don't like when I'm making a recipe, if I'm not like when I am writing a recipe, I have to really be meticulous about taking notes and measuring everything to precision. But the first step of creating a recipe is me just making it. And if I really like it, then I'll go back and try to recreate it and take notes. But it is so intuitive to me now because I've been doing it for now professionally since 2012. So 12 years. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I just always know, like, let me put a little of this, let me put a little of that, and then give it a little soul. You know, that's why it's called sweet potato soul.
Yes.
Because it's like, how can I add that soul? And to me, soul is that extra little oomph, this little extra little flavor.
Yes. That's very cool. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the business that you have built, right? You have built an incredibly successful YouTube channel and a lot of things revolve around that channel. So your brand partnerships, you know, your cookbook deal, your blog, this requires consistent content creation and you don't slip up. Mm-hmm. You have a ton of videos, so many recipes. How do you come up with new recipe ideas and so you can keep your audience engaged with fresh content? Mm-hmm. Like, what is your process planning to keep up with your channel and everything you have going on?
It's crazy. It's so crazy. So I'm going to give you two answers. In the beginning, I didn't have a lot of content, right? So I was I was younger and I was like, I lived in New York City. I shopped at the farmer's market at least once a week, usually twice. I was eating out at different restaurants. I had like all these friends who were, you know, also interested in vegan food. It was all new and fresh and exciting. And I was cooking for people so that every week I had to create like a new recipe, right? It was so that was the beginning. Inspiration was everywhere for me. I was trying to recreate these Southern soul food recipes. It was everywhere. But that was, you know, within years, I've over 400 recipes that are live on my blog right now. I have other ones that are like not live anymore because they need to be refreshed and new blog posts written and blah, blah, blah. But just like on the blog, on the Facebook blog, I've got over 400, closer to 500 like awesome recipes, right? So now I'm 14 years in having this blog. It's 14 years, just the blog. Yeah. 12 years, like as I say, 12 years, like professional cook, getting paid for a chef, you know, be a chef, but for the blog, it's been 14. And I don't do as many new recipes anymore. So like, for example, I just finished my second cookbook and I turned in the manuscript January 15th. So right before I met you, like the week before you and I met in person.
Yes, I remember you talking about that.
Yes, because you saw my original one. But yes, I turned that in. And that was 2 years in the making. So I was creating new recipes. My inspiration came from, you know, my travels, my cravings, shopping at the farmer's market, seeing stuff on Instagram, Pinterest, like eating out at restaurants. Inspiration, I can come up with ideas forever. It's just like in my brain. It's just in me. But now that that's done, the cookbook is done, I have not been creating, I mean, any. I don't think I've been, I'm trying to think. I have not created any new recipes. Now, I do post to my blog. Now I'm at the point of posting like 4 times a week, but those are refreshed old blog recipes. And the beauty of that is, you know, I've had the blog for so long. I do have a lot of followers who have been following me for, you know, like 12, 14 years, mm-hmm. but the majority of my followers are brand new. So for them, when I'm posting, like I think today, posting this pineapple skin tea, when I post that recipe, they are, it's brand new for like a lot of people. And it's going on Google, and I get a lot of organic Google search traffic. That means that there are tons of people, thousands, like tens of thousands of people every month who have never visited my blog. So I don't really have to create new content anymore on the blog. And likewise for the YouTube, I use as a way of, you know, educating people, but also drawing them back to the blog recipes. So I really don't have to create new recipes. I just create like new and refreshed blog posts. Like this year I've been focusing on like refreshing old content, but also doing new simple recipes. Like for example, later, I think it's this month or next month, we're posting instant pot steel cut oats. Like that's not really a recipe I'm creating. I eat that every day, right? But it's a blog post.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you get to that point when you've been food blogging forever. They, like you write cookbooks. When you write a cookbook, you make new recipes. But for the blog, like eventually I'll probably get back to that point.
Updating some photos, adjusting.
Yes.
Recipe, adjusting it, refreshing.
Yes. That's
the
thing.
And it's evergreen, right? Like
it's evergreen.
Lentil soup. That doesn't
change. Exactly.
Modify and do a new video, but you already have a good foundation of content. I love that.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is great because that means I'm at the point now, thank God, that where I just outsource a lot of these things. I've finally found a blog writer. She specializes in search engine optimization, SEO. So she, you know, researches to determine which blog posts need to be updated. And she rewrites the blog posts to, you know, to include like all the like 15 up to 15 keywords. She optimizes the format and all of this stuff. And then I like to do my own photography. However, I have started outsourcing it as well. So some of my posts are like a mix of what I like, my photos mixed with somebody else's because I'm so picky. I was going to say this post from today, it's almost all from the photographer I hired, but I think there's like one photo that I took in the blog post. It's just like a close-up shot, but I it's hard for me to like give away that one thing. And then I also outsource, like, you know, I have quite a few different things, different people helping with different things. So video, updating old videos, new videos, Pinterest, my Pinterest person, she does the entire Pinterest strategy. Like we don't need new recipes. We're just like using old things. Yeah. And make them new.
This is so interesting because similar to you, like, you know, the Clever Girl Finance blog has been around for a while. We still create new content, but we do a lot of content updating. It's like budgeting is budgeting, right?
Yeah, period. Exactly.
Saving, cutting back, paying down debt is what it is, but it's like different ways, updating content, updating new statistics. So it's very similar to you.
It's so similar.
Outsourcing stuff. So I love that you now have this approach where you're now in like a maintenance flow of your business.
Yeah,
you're not
good.
Doing so much of brand new creation, but maintaining and then adding, building on top, improving.
Exactly.
I love it. So you've built your house.
Yes.
And now you're just like keeping it going, right?
Yes. Amen.
You're snow removal. You're fixing the roof now and then.
Yeah. And it's actually like, it's so much less stressful. Like sometimes, like last night I was up really late. It was mostly because, you know, after my daughter goes to sleep, I get my work done. So she went to sleep pretty late last night. So I went to sleep pretty late. And I was just like, I was in such a happy place. I was editing photos. Like one little, you know, technical thing I've been doing is changing. I have a new blog. It launched, like the new design launched like a week ago. So I'm like making little edits, right? Like changing the size of the images from one size to another. And I just do that like a little bit every day. And it just feels so much less stressful to be in this maintenance phase than in this like extreme growth. Oh my goodness, I got to think of ideas. I got to do it all by myself phase, you know? And it is so, I will tell you, I have another blog idea. I purchased a new domain. I want to start this new blog. And that means that I will have to start from scratch. Like everything will be brand new recipes.
It's
like, yeah. And it's like, oh my gosh, I realize now the only way that I will do it at this point, because I have money, like I have a business so I can invest into it. But I would like to outsource like from the get-go. I just want to come up with the ideas and like tell people, like have other people help me even like develop the recipes, because I can't do both, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like extremely committed to like my me time, my fitness, and my family. Like I work out every single day. I spend time with my family every single day and my friends. And I'm like, I can't go back to like 2012.
Yeah. But I also think you're getting to a place where you're scaling your business now, and that's how it should be.
Yes. Right? So that's how it should be.
Any kind of guilt that's like, this is what scale is.
Yes.
You handing stuff off to other people. Cause I remember when I was beginning to hire a team, you know, I would tell myself, but Bola, you can do all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But just because
mm-hmm.
you can't, you
mm-hmm.
person with a limited number of hours, and
exactly.
Bola, you have kids. Why do you need to do all these things when you can hire and grow your business and
exactly.
give yourself peace of mind? And also, the key reminder I tell myself is that, Bola, when you're not working, there's still work being done in the business. And
yes.
that allows you to breathe and take a break and allows
yes.
your business to still grow. And that
exactly.
in itself is like, think about the people you're still able to reach when you are not working, the
exactly.
people you're still able to help and impact with the content that you create. So yeah, girl, you are scaling, and that is incredible.
Yay. I love it. I feel so blessed, because I'm telling you, I can still put myself back to where I was in 2010, being confused. Like I can tell you where I was walking, like on the street, having thoughts about, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm so lost. I remember the conversations I had on the phone with my grandmother, and like explaining to her how it felt. And so today, I know it's been 14 years, but it doesn't feel that long to me. So it feels like I'm very spiritual, and I just count my blessings, and I, you know, give thanks just like constantly, because it just goes to show too that like when you believe and when you're willing to put in the work and you're like, and you're willing to try new things. Cause you know, for me, like I said, this is accidental, but I was just open. And then this fell into my lap. And then I was like, I went with it. Like I cannot give up. But I feel like everybody has like there's something for everybody. You just have to find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. And it takes time to figure things out, right?
It does.
And I loved how you described that. Like you're in this space where you don't know what you want to do, and then you kind of figure it out, and then you figure out how to go from there, basically.
Yeah, just, and it's like next step. Because for me, I never had like a roadmap. I was following my passion, right? That was always my thing. And I will say, I did always want to be an entrepreneur, like somewhere inside I knew, because my whole entire family is, and they always were. So that was that's what I saw growing up. But I never had a roadmap. I never knew, like, basically when I make my plans, I never plan more than a year out. I can say like, oh, it would be nice, but I never plan more than a year out. And I really break down my plans to like 3 months. Like I'm not planning what I'm doing. Like technically I'll say like in the beginning of 2025, I want to do X, but I am not really like trying to set dates or anything. I'm just trying to like get the next 3 months nailed down. And then you can, for me at least, I really do accomplish my goals when I work that way, because things shift, things change, failures happen.
Yep.
And you got to pivot. And if I'm so attached to like, this has to work this way, then I will get discouraged.
Yeah, I can totally relate. Like for me, it's more of an energy level. Like I can make even my to-do list for the day, and I can see it in front of me. But when the energy is not there, girl.
Sorry, energy is not there. Exactly. Yeah. That's the beauty of being an entrepreneur, though, isn't it?
So you mentioned you have your blog, you have your YouTube channel, you have Pinterest, you have social media. So these are all the ways that you are places you're creating content, promoting your business, all of that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit more about what types of collaborations you do? So more of like the revenue aspect, like what are the collaborations you do that bring in money for your business?
Right. So for many years, my main source of income, and it probably still is, but I just don't do it as much because now I put more energy into the blog. But my main source of income was through sponsorships. So like endorsement deals, sponsored content on all these different platforms you just named. It's primarily social media and YouTube. Mm-hmm. I do still do sponsored ads or content, but yeah, now it was so honestly, it was kind of like, it was difficult, right? Difficult dealing with brands, difficult trying to promote somebody else's, you know, business. Mm-hmm. And yes, you're getting paid for it. And yes, I still do it, but it's definitely ideally after like how many years, like 4 years, 5 years of this being the biggest portion of my income, I would like to move away from that. Right now I'm sort of exploring going back to online courses and memberships because I do have experience doing that in the past. And so I might do that again. But another big source of my income, especially now, because I've, you know, went back to blog posting and I'm taking the blog more serious, is just ad revenue from the blog. So, you know, I have a pretty decent amount of traffic to my blog. So I'm getting, you know, monthly ad revenue every month. I got a ton of videos. So you make a pretty good percentage of your ad rev off videos on the actual blog. And then likewise on YouTube too. But yeah, I'm certainly trying to, I mean, like certain brands I will still work with, like that I really, really actually love and use, but I really would like to move away from that. They're back in the day, like when social media was new, I was like, oh, I want to give away all my content for free because I had come from doing these programs, right? Oh, I'm going to give away all my content for free and let sponsorships pay for it. Like, that's pretty cool. And that was pretty cool. But now it's increasingly clear that we are the product. Like, we're not buying products. We're the product when we use social media. And I do post to social media, but as I don't even really use social media anymore because I don't like it. And so I'm trying to.
I feel like I'm on the same wavelength with you right
now. Yeah, you and me and so many people. And there you go. I feel like it is actually a trend. So if it is a trend, if it's not just the two of us, which I know it isn't, then for me, I'm thinking too, like, you know, I have a really big newsletter. And so really, you know, leveraging that to, you know, really create community outside of these social media platforms. And I have a great community outside of these social media platforms. And when I do want to sell something like my cookbook, or a funny anecdote is like when I needed recipe testers for my cookbook, this was like a year ago, I only needed 15 people. And I really didn't think that many people would sign up. But I had within the first 24 hours, over 570 people sign up to be recipe testers. It was so funny because I thought it was going to be like 30 people, but so many people, because that is the power of your newsletter and your community off of social media. Like those people would have signed up on social media also, they would have, but they probably wouldn't have followed through. They probably would have forgotten. It's because it's the nature of the scroll. So I'm definitely like, I will continue posting to social media. I am only posting food and lifestyle, but like, you know, vegan lifestyle. So I will post, right? But I don't even use it myself. And definitely like want to create more of, like I said, that membership, that community, even like the free, like my newsletter is totally free off of social media.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I firmly believe in diversification of revenue streams, right? So you
100%.
brand partnerships, which, like you said, can be frustrating. they're not predictable, some brands you don't want to work with. But then you also have your cookbooks. You know,
oh, yeah, that's true. The
courses,
they pay well.
Or the workshops, things like that. If you do any speaking, it's all about diversifying. I'm really big on diversifying. I'm not big on social media. Like, you know, I get it. Like TikTok and Reel is what Reels are what's trending right now. And we do participate. It's just, I'm not going to be like, here's what I'm wearing today to show you how much it costs. Why should you make breakfast? It's just not who I am.
Yeah. And you know what else?
Always on.
Exactly. Oh, I'm not either. I'm not either. I was actually like, I love being on in front of the camera. I really do. But at the same time, I love it even more to like, you know, be sharing food. Like I don't really, you know, like I don't love it enough, I guess. But another thing that I think is important when you think about social media. So I made so much money on social media from, let's say, 2019 to 2021 were my like top years, right? And I had so much. If you look back at my engagement was really high. I made a ton of money. Everything was great. It was, you know, COVID, which everybody was home cooking. It was great. It was great. Blogging was, you know, I was like only blogging like once a week and I made so much money because, you know, everybody was on the internet all the time and it was great, but that didn't last. It didn't last not only because I wasn't willing to post videos and blog. Like it wasn't that. It was like trends change, especially on the internet and especially mostly with social media. And so those trends, and it happens to like everybody, and maybe not like
algorithms got smart and realized
exactly
the creator is making money. We should be making money too.
We should be making money
you
too.
Pay us.
And even
you can be engaged.
Even beyond like those algorithms, it's like people are getting smarter, like in attention spans change and get shorter. Like for example,
overwhelmed, yes.
Yeah. Yep. Like that's part of why I can't watch social media anymore, because I'm a pretty laid back, like I'm pretty zen type of person. And I'm not like anxious. I don't have any issues with that. However, when I get on social media, that fast, everything is fast.
So much,
like that so makes much. Me feel anxious.
You look up and you're like, wait a minute. I've been in here for 25
exactly.
minutes. 30 minutes doing what? What I...
Exactly. Wasting my life.
What are you doing, Bella?
But so if you're not diversifying, like you said, you're gonna get left behind. Cause what happened for me, those 3 years where I was making a lot of money, thank God I invested my money. It's all good. But those 3 years, I also still was blogging. I still had my newsletter. All the core stuff. And so, and like then, you know, social media changed, Instagram changes. I don't even like it anymore. So
in what you just said, it's so key because, and I always say this on any business podcast I record, is that when you are creating a business, when you're working in a business, you need to manage your home base, the things that you own. You own your blog, you own your newsletter. Like that audience is your audience that's come to you. You do not own YouTube. You don't own Instagram or TikTok. They can decide to change the algorithm, delete
today.
All your content, block you this second, and you can't do anything about it. So I love that you prioritize your home base, which is your blog, which is your newsletter. And that's what we do as well, because you will see that trends come and go. I remember in just a few short years, we've gone from Periscope to Snapchat to TikTok to, and there's
new ones
coming up next.
Right?
Believe that these are not the last social media platforms that everybody's going to engage on. There's always a new one popping up, and it just takes, you know, one to get traction for people to start shifting. Now we're seeing Threads. Now we're seeing Facebook groups changing. Now it's like so much change.
I can't keep track.
You don't own and you can't keep track, but you own that website. You own the content of that website.
You own that blog, or the newsletter.
You own that newsletter. You can talk to that audience. So prioritize those. I love that you mentioned that as well, because it's so key. And
it's so key.
Once you are engaged with your core audience that comes to the platform that you own, you can then leverage different ways to monetize them, like your membership, like whatever products and services you want to sell, like your cookbooks, et cetera, things like that. So that's the approach that I take. And sometimes, you know, when I go on social media, because I rarely go on my personal Instagram account. I can't do it. Post business stuff on there when I have like brand partnerships and things like that. You know, it's easy to see all these creators like, oh my God, why am I not doing reels? Why am I not doing TikTok? Why am I not doing all this stuff? But if you don't have the capacity to do it, number one, if you're a solopreneur, you're just starting out or you haven't hired a team, focus on your home base.
Right. It is not necessary.
Yes. And it's okay not to be doing what everybody's doing, because the uniqueness about your business is you and what you offer, and you will find your tribe. People will sign up for your newsletter. So you can share that kind of stuff, but don't feel like you have to film 24 hours of your life to make a time-lapse TikTok.
Exactly.
Because unless you... the reels that I can't just... They have me mesmerized where... As the reel is going on that 30 seconds, there's like an outfit for every 30 seconds, the fashion influencer.
Right.
How much time did this take? It's incredible.
And unless you love that, you're not, unless you really love it, it's not sustainable for you. And people say it all the time. I was a blogger. And it was unsustainable. And I hated my job. It was a grind, blah, 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 which I get that. But if you can put all your attention, not all, but most of your attention and your energy into those areas that do not drain you. And if they do, if you get to the point where you can outsource them, like I don't really like doing a newsletter, right? Mm-hmm. But I outsource my newsletter and that's what, you know, it's grown, it bubble, it's great. But don't put your energy into things that you hate. Just don't do it. You don't need it.
Like you said,
Yeah, make it sustainable. Absolutely.
This is so good. So you've already answered a number of questions I was going to ask you, but I wanted to ask you this because your YouTube channel is not just about food or recipes, mm-hmm. but other things. You talk about lifestyle tips. You do videos. You talk about your personal life. How do you balance this while staying true to your focus on vegan cooking?
Yeah.
That can inspire vegan cooking. So how do you decide, okay, I'm going to share my personal life story. I'm going to share some lifestyle tips and I'm going to share... Like, how do you create that balance? Because I watch some YouTube and I've heard creators say that, oh, when I started talking about my personal life, my channel started to decline.
Oh.
But you are still growing. Like, you have a solid
audience. Yeah, mine's kind of opposite.
What is your balance? Like, because you are personable. You share who you are, but you still remain true to your core, which is the recipe stuff. So how do you, what is your cadence for that, I guess?
Well, for my channel, people really like to see what I'm eating. What I'm eating, what I'm feeding my daughter. They love that. So what I eat in a day, you know, things, vlogs, people love my vlogs. My recipe videos, if I do just a straight up recipe video, we never know how well it's going to do. We don't know. So, but if I do like a what I eat in a day and we're like hanging out and I'm showing you my food, then we know that's going to do pretty well. We know it's going to be pretty decent. But my initial approach to everything that I do is I go back to how is this going to serve my audience? I'm a big why person. Like, why am I doing this? I think that's why I've been successful and I've been doing it for so long, because I have a genuine mission. From the day I had my epiphany in 2011, I have a mission. So I go back to my why. I'm doing this to help people. I'm doing this to help animals. Specifically, I'm trying to help people to recognize that they can take charge over their own health, to be empowered, to feel amazing, to be energized, to show up better in the world. So anyway, from that point, I say, okay, this is what I'm going to post. You know, this is going to
align
mission.
Your values.
Yeah. But then 100%. Selfishly, it's kind of selfishly, but it's kind of like, I know people love it. Like I did a house tour, right? That was my first video back. I took a long hiatus from YouTube when I was working. I was getting a divorce. I was writing a cookbook and I had just moved to Atlanta. So I was like in the middle of my move. So I took an 18-month hiatus and the first video back was a home tour. And that was kind of like, the idea was like, I love my house. I think it's so pretty. And
it
then
is, by the way.
Thank you.
Your kitchen is amazing.
My kitchen, I love. And I know other people love to see house tours. I know I do. So
your house has a history to it. I remember I watched
a lot.
About of your home and like, guys, go to that channel.
Check it out. Yeah. And people like that. Like, I know we're not cooking. I know we're not talking about vegan food, but it's like, I'm your friend and I care about you. And I'm inviting you into this home where all these videos are going to be produced anyway. It's a way to basically, I do think for my channel, sharing the personal aspect is a way to build camaraderie and trust with my audience, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I guess on my end with personal finance, it's, I don't share, like, this is my, you know how people do, like, this is what my budget is for the month.
Yes.
Because that's not the angle of the channel.
Right.
But I do share personal stuff more so on the podcast here, a little bit here and there on YouTube, but I'm okay with that. Right. Because
yeah.
That's also my personality.
Exactly. And it's got to fit. Because like I said before, you got to make it sustainable honest to you.
Exactly. And what I found is that I've watched a ton of different niches on YouTube, like fashion, cooking, beauty, business. I recently I'm in this tunnel now on YouTube about how things are made.
Ooh, fun.
It's like stuff that you don't even want to know how it's made. I'm watching videos on how it's made.
How's it made? I love
and
it.
I realize that there's always an audience for everything.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
There are, one of my friends was telling me that, you know, her son he's little, he loves to watch elevator videos. And I was like, yeah, people that just go in elevators and public spaces and they film themselves going up and down. There's no conversation, nothing. And those videos have 10 million.
Are you for real?
Of just somebody coming into the elevator, pushing the buttons, going up, coming down, the end.
What?
So there is an audience for you.
Amazing.
Out there.
There is for all of us.
Don't be discouraged when you watch YouTube, because sometimes you may be like, okay, let me do some research. Let me find another recipe YouTuber or finance YouTuber. And you see what they do. Like, oh my God, this is not who I am. It's okay.
Right, right.
Be who you are.
Be who you are.
And create the content that you feel good creating, and that works too.
Yes. What do they say? Comparison is the thief of joy. It's also the thief of progress.
And of peace of mind and of everything.
Everything. Just do you, boo.
So I have just a couple more questions for you. As your channel has grown, as your business has grown overall, what have been some of your biggest challenges? One big challenge that you faced and you overcame?
I think my biggest challenge, honestly, has been outsourcing, finding the right people to help me. I started all of this with my ex-husband. We were boyfriend and girlfriend at the time. Not the blog, but the YouTube channel. In 2011, he was like, Janae, let's make a YouTube channel for your cooking. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. I don't even know what YouTube is. Let's do it. And he and I worked together for a long time, and it was a challenge, let me tell you, because we do not work together well. But it became, like, from my beginnings, working with people has been a challenge. I am an only child, so maybe that has something to do with it. I'm a real free spirit. I am, like, I'm not about, like, I'm not the type of person who's like, today I'm doing this in this order and da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, I'm in it here, a little this, a little that. I have maybe a little ADHD, and I'm cool with it. You know what I mean? So, but he was the opposite. So that didn't work. But we tried it for years. I mean, he worked for me. I would say worked for me with me. I say for me because I'm like, I guess he wouldn't say that. But anyway, that's another story. We worked together until 2020 when we split. And it was a challenge the entire time. But I still was so passionate about this that I'm like, ah, whatever. I can deal with challenge. Whatever. I don't care. Mm-hmm. And then once he stopped working for me, the first person I found is my like right hand. I love her. And she still works for me right now. But then aside from her, I have definitely gone through ups and downs with people oh my God. Challenges.
I know.
Challenges.
I'm there with you.
You get
it. I'm there with you. Yes.
But I think, and I even have gotten to the point where like, I can't trust anybody and I got to do it all by myself. And then I remember like, no. That's not how life works.
None is better than perfect. And
yes,
people learn and they grow. Nobody's
going to move on.
And there's some things you're going to just have to be okay with.
Yes.
And I've struggled to accept that, but I've accepted it because my team is awesome. Like I have a really great team right now. Everybody's exceptional, fantastic, but they all do things in their own way. I give constructive feedback and they also give me feedback, but I'm okay with you do it the way you do it because I trust you to do it well.
Right.
It can't always be my own way, especially if I want to grow.
Right.
Or stay in this business. Exactly. So I understand.
What I was doing in the past though, is I was looking for people to train. I was like, I'm going to hire you and I'm going to teach you how to do this thing that I do really well. And that was where I was getting hung up. That was what was not working out for me. Like I have to tell you this one offline, but I had an experience where I hired somebody who was, I thought was extremely qualified, and turned out that they weren't, because it's just, in looking back, I can see where they weren't, you know, in some areas they were, but not in the area that I needed. So now what I do, I have like three new people working for me since the beginning of the year. And each of those people is an expert. They know way more than me. And that's what I'm doing now. I am not trying to train anybody. They can teach me. They can like tell me how they do it. That's okay. But I am no longer trying to train people, because that's just a headache. And so now these three people, I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. Yes, I have to spend a lot more money. That is true. But I can see, just for example, for my writer, I look at we're updating old posts, right? It's not like I'm everything fresh new, but it doesn't matter because that's not how Google works. Mm-hmm. And already I see my traffic immediately up. My, you know, Unwrapped, if you can see like how much money you make every day, day to day, way up, like immediately. This is why we spend more money.
She learns your flow. She learns your approaches. But
yes.
You want to hire, and everybody has to kind of go through trial and error.
Yes, you do.
And sometimes you have incredible people, and they have to go for different circumstances.
That's right? It.
You can't keep them. Yeah. They can't work for you anymore. Life happens. You know, people move on. So I totally get those challenges, but you know, you stay in it. You figure it out.
Yes, you got to stay. Because what else? Look, I went to school for acting. What in the world else am I going to do?
I know. It's like, and even if you went to school to do anything else, what if that's not even what you want to do, right?
Exactly.
You're not interested in that. You don't want to do that. So I get it.
We make it work.
Well, thank you so much for coming on to share. You have shared so much with us here. I've learned a lot from you. I would love for you to share, what are your goals for the next, I guess you said you don't plan more than 1 year. So what's your 1 year, your big 1 year goal for your business?
Oh my gosh. My big one is to start a podcast.
Yes, we did talk about this.
Yes, my health and what it's going to be about, health and wellness for, I want to say for Black women, but I might keep it broad and like heavily advertised to Black women, because I am one myself, but it's going to be health and wellness for women. Yeah. My age range, I'm 37. So like millennials, because there's a lot like that for men, you know, which it applies to women as well. I listen to so many hosted, podcasts like that hosted by men. Let me get my own. So that's what I'm working on.
Yeah, I think that's a good natural transition for you.
Thank you. I think so too. So that's it. And then my new cookbook comes out in February 2025.
That's going to be here before you know it.
I know. I'm excited though.
So you also have to tell me, what is your clever girl superpower? I ask everybody this.
Oh, my clever girl superpower. My clever girl superpower is making an amazing meal in less than 10 minutes.
Oh, that's fantastic. I don't think I can do that. I can make a sandwich for you.
It's okay. I can teach you how.
I can make some bagels that were already in the freezer for you.
My favorite 10 minute meal, I make it, you know, anytime last minute, because I don't like to eat out at restaurants too much. I'm like a super duper clean eater. I say 90-10, but I'm really probably like 95% of the time. But it's because I've learned how to make stuff so fast. So my favorite super fast meal is my lentil tacos. And yes, the recipe is on the blog. It's called, I think it just search lentil tacos. I don't know. But lentil tacos on sweet potato sole, and super easy lentils. You season them with cumin and chili powder and garlic. And I use canned lentils because that's so easy. Of course, you could cook them, but if we're talking about 10 or less than 10 minutes, using canned, I'm telling you, these things are so flavorful. Top them with a little bit of shredded red cabbage, maybe some pickled onions. If you already have them in the fridge, you know it takes 2 minutes to warm up a tortilla. I also add frozen spinach. And at the end, it is a balanced meal. You've got your whole grain, green vegetable, protein, and healthy fat with the avocado. It is so good. We eat them all the time.
Oh, that sounds delicious. That sounds delicious.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Last question. Tell everybody, remind everybody where they can find you and keep up with you.
Yes, you can find me at sweetpotatosoul.com, and I am Sweet Potato Soul everywhere else on all other platforms.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Shanae, for being here and sharing your wealth of knowledge with us as you've built your amazing business.
Thank you. I
appreciate you so much.
I appreciate being on here with you. I love your podcast and you are awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you've loved the episode, but you don't yet subscribe to the podcast, you can do that everywhere you listen to your podcast episodes. And head on over to iTunes and leave a review so other amazing women just like you can find this podcast as well. Thank you so much for being here, and I'll talk to you on the next episode.